hear that case after a brief recess.
Thank you. Stand, please.
Good morning. My name is Paul Cornoni. I represent the plaintiff, Wright Sigmund, in this case. As the court is aware, Mr. Sigmund suffered some very grave injuries as a result of a bombing that took place at a commercial office building at 5225 Wisconsin Avenue. The issue before the court today is the lower court ruled that the crime at issue, the bombing, was not foreseeable as a matter of law. We obviously feel differently. The case law in D.C. is consistent on one thing, that the factors that you need to look at, the first factor that the court should look at is whether or not there was a relationship between the parties. Here we were proffered to the court that there is a significant relationship between the parties, one of tenant and landlord. Wright Sigmund was an employee of Wolf & Cohen, which was a business in the property at issue, and he was thus a tenant. And under our law, he was entitled to a duty of protection. Now, when there is a relationship, that somewhat lessens the heightened foreseeability standard.
The heightened foreseeability standard involves a slew of cases in the District of Columbia, and you all have argued them back and forth. What I don't understand, and Judge Huvel adverts to this in their penultimate paragraph, is why any of this matters if the leaving the door open didn't add anything to perpetrator's ability to access the car.
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. And in this case is unique because we actually have the testimony of the criminal party, of the criminal himself. And what he says is that he would not have performed this crime if the rolling steel garage door was functioning. He needed to take his own car into the garage, park it next to the car, because he had a number of materials that he needed to use, and needed some time, obviously, to perform the criminal act. In this case, we actually have the criminal party saying that they would not have performed this.
He's the brother, is he not, of the victim?
That's correct. He's the half-brother. And one of the issues that was raised at the lower court level, and I believe Your Honor is hinting at it, is maybe he has a interest in being unforthright. The problem with that argument is everything else that he stated in his deposition that he testified to was verified. Verified that the rolling steel garage door was not working. Verified that there was no cameras. Verified that there's no guard. Everything he said was uncontradicted. And so the weight of the evidence is that he would not have performed this act.
Was this a proximate cause issue? I'm not sure I completely understand whether the court is independently basing a judgment on that ground or not.
It was my understanding that the grounds was solely on the issue of foreseeability.
The question of whether the garage door opened was sort of mildly relevant to foreseeability, but the proximate cause issue she wasn't deciding it on?
That's correct. I believe that the entire case was dismissed on the issue of foreseeability.
So it seems to me that your biggest problem is this July 2009 opinion of the D.C. Court of Appeals in DeSalvo, right? That is your biggest problem. Because this is a case in a garage by a student who was attacked, where the court assumes for the purposes of the case that there was the relationship, and the court says the requirement of heightened foreseeability is a showing of the defendant's increased awareness of the danger of a particular criminal act. In this case, DeSalvo's had to establish that UDC had an increased awareness of the risk of a violent armed attack in the parking garage. And that was just a armed attack. That was not a bomb.
That's correct, Your Honor. That case has recently come up.
Right. So what's the evidence of that they should have a heightened increased awareness of the risk of this kind of, whether it has to be a complete explosion or just a homicide of some form, where's the evidence that kind of activity was likely to occur in the garage? The other side says a survey of the criminal incident reports dating back 6.5 years shows a complete absence of any violent crime in the parking garage. Is that true, by the way?
That's not true, Your Honor. There was evidence of a robbery with a gun, and it's a little bit tricky from the police report whether it was inside the parking garage or directly outside of it. It was certainly listed at the property at issue.
But it wasn't violent. That is, nobody was injured. Is that correct?
No one was injured, Your Honor.
There's no case in 6.5 years of anybody ever being injured in that garage.
There's been assaults in that garage, Your Honor, and there's
assaults in the nature of what?
In the nature of an assault. Someone striking another person. At the property, Your Honor.
No, in the garage is my question. I'm asking you whether the other side is lying when they say on page 10.
About erring.
Erring. Incorrectly stating the facts when they say, and I have no view one way or the other, I don't know. A survey of the criminal incident reports dating back 6.5 years prior to the bombing indicates there was a complete absence of any violent crime in the parking garage. Is that true or false?
Your Honor, I believe that statement is deciphering the police reports, which is difficult to do.
Right, so what's your best argument that there was a aware of the particular criminal act here, where they had a reason to have increased awareness of that danger?
The best argument is, and it's the arguments that the experts in the actual industry looks at, Your Honor. The court will note that there is even the defense experts, the security experts, could not name one garage in the District of Columbia area. Did not have the rolling steel garage door.
That's a different question, right? That's a question of whether they've taken the proper measures. The issue here is whether they needed to take any measures, and for that you need to have some evidence.
Your Honor, the evidence is that there was, before the garage door was installed, because suspicious persons were hanging around that area, and there was complaints to the property manager,
How many years was that before? That was the prior property manager, right?
It's exactly right. It was probably approximately 4 years before. And then during the incidents that we cite, and what our experts will say is, When you have a property like this, you look at the literature concerning parking garages. It is no surprise to anyone in the industry that parking garages are hotspots for criminal activity. One of the defense's own experts, which we cite in our brief, discusses this. We even picked a site from his article talking about bombings and talking about parking garages as hotspots. All of the crime that took place at the property was breaking into cars or a theft, and there was crimes against person. The District of Columbia law does not say that you get one free car bombing. What it has to say is you need to look at that property and the significant factors there and decide whether or not you need to provide safety to the individuals.
This DeSalvo case says, for example, the crimes detailed by the DeSalvos, none was committed with a weapon, none was in a campus parking garage, and none resulted in any serious injury to the victim. So are there any cases within a couple blocks of this garage where in a similar garage there was, I suppose it's debatable whether it has to be with a bomb, but whether there was any crimes committed with a gun that resulted in serious injury to the victims?
Your Honor, when our experts looked at the surrounding area, What they found was there was over 503 crimes that occurred within a 5-block radius, and they could not determine specifically which crimes, because some of these incident reports don't say parking garage, they just say property. But to be fair to the court, over 10% of the crime that occurred in the 5-block area occurred at the parking garage.
How'd you get that? If the reports didn't specify it?
Sometimes reports will just say the property. They will not say whether or not it occurred at the garage.
So it's 53 that actually said the garage.
53 that said garage.
And perhaps more that were unspecific.
59, I'm sorry, Your Honor, 59 that occurred in parking lots or parking garages. But to get back to the court's initial question is, and the other case that the defense cites is Bruno, which was a case handled by our firm, which we're quite well aware of. In Bruno and in all of these cases, they are still mentioning Doe as the high watermark for foreseeability. And this case is very similar to Doe. If you
help me, before you give me Doe, we've got DeSalvo, and I'm trying to see where you are which is, as far as I can tell, the latest and the most directly, that is, in terms of the facts on point. So what's your best what is the evidence about similar crimes in the immediate vicinity? What's your best evidence on that?
Your Honor, there's 10 assaults with a deadly weapon, one aggravated assault, 25 robberies, one carjacking, 41 burglaries, and 25 auto thefts in a 5-block radius.
Okay, so is this on in your blue brief somewhere?
Your Honor, it's at page 25 of the brief.
Okay, so let's just focus.
Within the 2 years prior to the incident in a 5-block radius. It's a paragraph that's...
I got it.
Okay.
So 10 with a deadly weapon, one aggravated assault, one carjacking. Uh-huh. Any injuries? Do we have that? Do we
know? Presumably, Your Honor, there are injuries in a number of those. An aggravated assault, I know from prior work that...
What's the definition of an aggravated assault?
An aggravated assault, I'm not a criminal lawyer. I don't want to misrepresent this to the court, but it's an assault that's taken on to, obviously, a next step from a simple assault. Where someone is injured or there's certain behavior that's been used that would tell the police officer that this simply isn't an normal assault. But DeSalvo doesn't overturn what Doe said, what every Court of Appeals decision has said is Doe is the high watermark. And I believe that the facts in this case are very similar to Doe. And in the Bruno
decision.
Take
it by high watermark, they mean we're not going to go any higher than that and that's going to be a relatively rare event. That's the implication of those opinions. So it has to be sort of exactly the same as Doe to get you there.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with exactly the same, but I feel that there are certain similarities in the two cases, Your Honor. And those being the relationship, obviously. I've touched on that. The security measure. The Bruno decision discusses Doe and says that the security door is far more threatening than the lack of security cameras or that maybe the lack of a security guard. This is a rolling steel garage door that every garage in the city uses. And the other fact is, in this case, is the building is a private building. Now, there is going to be argument that it was open to the public, but that simply the weight of the evidence is that it was overwhelmingly a private building. I realize I've gone over my time.
Good morning. My name is Brian Hoffman. I'm arguing on behalf of all the appellees. Prescott Sigmund began implementing his plan to murder his father way back in the spring of 2002. Now, that is months and months before the garage door broke. The chronology of this case is important because it shows that this was not a crime of opportunity. By June 2002, he had already researched how to make the bombs. He had already made the bombs. He had already, using his fake IDs, he had already targeted the vehicle because it was exclusively driven by his father and he didn't want to hurt anyone else. He had already targeted the garage because that was the only place the vehicle was parked, and he had a key to the vehicle, and he was familiar with the building.
Well, was there testimony from him that he would not have done this in the garage if the door had not been open and he had to go through because he needed to be in the car, his own vehicle, to shield his materials?
That's not correct. He said that he was already prepared to commit the murder. And the timing, the only issue with the garage door was he said it provided him with an opportunity. But he had also testified that he was aware that there was other ways to access the garage on foot. Remember, this is a public parking garage. Once you park your car, the only way to retrieve your car is on foot. So like every parking garage, there has to be pedestrian access. And this building had pedestrian access off the street. You just walk through the restaurant, down the stairs, down the elevator. He was aware of that. And he had laid all of his plans in order. He put the bombs in a briefcase so that if the garage door was closed, he could just walk the bomb down into the parking garage.
What was your brother at the bar referring to when he said that the perpetrator testified that he wouldn't have done it if he had to enter through the restaurant? They needed the vehicle.
He simply did not say that.
Was there anything remotely like that, or was this just a fantasy on the part of counsel?
He used the word opportunity. He said he didn't learn the garage door was broken until July 9, 2002. Now, that is months and months and months after he had already planned the assassination. And that's undisputed. He planted the bombs July 10 The door was repaired July 11. The bombs went off July 12. But his plan was long in effect before he even learned the door was broken, and he did not say he would not have perpetrated the crime. His crime was already in the works. He said that it was an opportunity they took advantage of, and that is the limit of it. And I would point out that, you know, his plan was not to get everything ready for the attack and sit back and wait for a door to break by wear and tear. But this case is not about proximate causation, as Judge Garland had pointed out. This case is not about what a jury would do.
Well, the judge thought that the that these issues about the door and the restaurant access bore upon foreseeability.
The lower court was specific that her ruling granting summary judgment was not based on proximate cause, and I can tell you that on page, I believe it was page 19 of the order, says that whether or not Prescott would have still committed this crime had the door been fixed a little earlier only goes to proximate causation. It does not go to heightened foreseeability. It does not go to duty. And the reason this case was dismissed in the lower court was duty. There's no duty by the defendants to protect the plaintiff from the criminal acts of third parties unless there's heightened foreseeability. Only when there's heightened foreseeability does the duty arise to protect.
Here's what she said. She said some things favorable to your position, and then she said, given that relatively easy public access to the garage was the status quo, the fact that the garage door was stuck in an open position made increased crime in the garage only marginally more foreseeable than otherwise would have been. So it was somewhat more foreseeable, but not enough, she thought, to tip the balance.
That's correct. It would, you know, heightened foreseeability is a threshold question for the court, not for the jury, because it goes to duty. If it gets by the court, then it would only be addressed again in relation to proximate causation. And the McKeithian case at 717, 718 says when you don't have heightened foreseeability, it does two things. It severs duty and the inquiry ends, but even if you were to continue the inquiry, it severs proximate causation. So it would but you don't even get to proximate causation in this case because the whole case turned on duty and heightened foreseeability. I'd like to say a couple words on the prior crimes that this court had addressed. We know it's very clear under D.C. law that the appellant cannot rely on generic crime statistics and neighborhood crime rates to establish a heightened foreseeability. All that Lacey, Clement, Beretta, Potts, they all say that. In this property, for the 6.5 years before the bombing, there was no violent crime in the parking garage. There was no violent crime in the building. There were three simple assaults, none of which occurred in any of the common areas or the garage, none of which involved a weapon, none of which involved injury. The assault that I believe that counsel was referring to was...
What do you mean when you say generic? I mean, what if in the garage next door, you know, people were blowing up cars every day?
Well,
and that garage had an open, had no door. Every day, another bomb went off and somebody was killed.
Well, I think that if there was bombings all around right next door, that would certainly provide
some... Well, here they say within a five-block radius. What if in garages within a five-block radius bombs were going off every day? Wouldn't that be relevant?
I think it would be relevant. Wouldn't it
indicate foreseeability?
It would be taken into account. Foreseeability, of course, is you have to take into a combination of factors. That's all of the case law.
Well, I know, but you just said that... I'm trying to just follow up on your statement. You can't rely on generic neighborhood reports of crimes. Yes. What does that mean?
Well, basically, it's exactly what the appellant's putting forth here. Even if you look at Bailey, Potts, and Clements, the court was specific that those were all gunshot cases with gun violence. The court said in all of those cases there has not been any prior gun play or gun violence on these properties, or if you look at Bailey, for instance, at other school activities on other similar properties. So you do have to... There has to be precise proof of prior similar crimes against similar people at similar in time and space under similar circumstances. And even if you look in the 2 years before this bombing, in the five-block radius of this building, there were no homicides. There was no attempted homicides. There was no bombings. There was no attempted bombings. And if you look, and you had no one complaining about security in the building or security in the garage, you had no one requesting additional security on these properties, and this is a common element in all those other...
Do you know anything about these, what they cite on page 25 of their brief, the 10 assaults with a deadly weapon, the one aggravated assault, one car. I mean, assault with a deadly weapon can simply be your money or your life.
Without anybody
being hurt. I don't believe aggravated assault requires somebody to be hurt. I don't know. Obviously, a carjacking can not require anybody. Do you know anything about these citations that they presented here?
The answer to that is that I know none of them occurred in the parking garage.
Yeah. Well, they don't claim that they occurred.
Well, that's why they are the type of evidence that's irrelevant. And
what
not
if they occurred right outside the front door of the parking garage? Would that not matter to you? That would make no difference? What if people were being... What if, of these cases, the 10 assaults, the 25 robberies, the 41, somebody was injured every day in front of this parking garage?
If someone was injured every day in front of the parking garage, I don't know if the doors open or close or what time of day. I think all those things would be relevant, whether or not they were customers or tenants or strangers.
You have no idea. What you're telling me is you don't know anything about these.
I can say that there's been no evidence that they occurred in the garage or in the building. And that's undisputed. And, you know, the plaintiff in the case below had the burden of proof. And there was no – and even the lower court, Judge Ruvell, noted that none of those occurred in the building. None of those occurred in the parking garage. And even if you focus in on 2002, before the bombing, there was no crimes of any kind in the parking garage, whether the door be up, whether the door be down, whether it be open, whether it be closed, whether it be fixed, whether it be broken. So the garage door itself, access, is never really an element in evaluating heightened foreseeability in this case. But I believe the case law is clear that it's a demanding proof for heightened foreseeability that it is not sufficient to look at the surrounding neighborhood and say, well, there's violence in that neighborhood. Relatively speaking, this is an incredibly safe neighborhood. It's right on the border of Friendship Heights. And, you know, you can pick any building in the District of Columbia and run off hundreds of crimes over years and years and years. But the question for heightened foreseeability for this kind of incident is specific to the location and specific to the type of crime. Otherwise, you're going to be getting too close to strict liability. The appellant has put forth an argument that this case is similar to Doe, and that couldn't be further from the truth. Unlike Doe, this was a public parking garage. It welcomed members of the public. Whereas in Doe, it excluded members of the public. It was an elementary school. And Bruno, of recent case, held that when you have a public property that's open to the public, it weighs very heavily against heightened foreseeability because, as that court pointed out, even if you hire security guards, it would be impossible for them to say, hey, these people, and look out over a sea of customers and say, these people are good people and these people have criminal intent. It would be impossible to do that. Unlike Doe, there was no history of violent crime in this garage. And there was history of violent crime in Doe. There was a history of arson in Doe. Unlike Doe, there was no history of unwanted visitors or loiterers walking around the grounds. And let's face it, in a parking garage, that's how you get your car. You have to walk into the property. But look at Prescott Sigmund, just to finish up. Prescott Sigmund, it wouldn't be suspicious to see him on this property. He had a key to the vehicle. He was there all the time visiting his dad. He was there once or twice a week. He had never been evicted or ejected or barred from the property. He had never committed a crime or violence on the property. So it wouldn't be suspicious to see him. In Doe, it was very suspicious to see an adult male walking around an elementary school. So this, and of course, there's no special relationship in this case like there was in Doe with a duty of a school to protect a student. So this case is nothing like Doe. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr.
If I may briefly, because it appears that my word may be called into question. I have three cites for the court.
Yeah.
Appendix 916, which is an affidavit from one of our experts, a former police chief. At P, it says, Defendant Prescott Sigmund needed his vehicle to commit this crime. Specifically, Defendant Prescott Sigmund stated during my interview that he needed his vehicle nearby for access to the bomb materials and to conceal his equipment and materials, and it goes so forth. Then at page A1166, there's a discussion in the deposition of Prescott Sigmund where he states, and had discovered that the garage door was broken, and it seemed like that was the opportunity I guess I had been looking for. And then on page A1173, it discusses Well, that became, I think you testified earlier, though, because you found out the door was broken, you saw that as your opportunity. Answer yes. So that's where I was citing from earlier, Your Honor. We respectfully disagree with the analysis that this is not similar to Doe. When you look at Bruno's analysis of Doe, it specifically differentiates Bruno from Doe. And I believe this court should do the same. It says, first, there's a relationship between the school officials and young children. This is similar to the relationship between a tenant and a landlord, where there's a duty to protect. The next thing the Bruno court says, that difference aside, Doe is further distinguishable from this case because the failed security measure in Doe, including a broken gate and broken doors, were far more threatening. It goes on, had those security measures worked, there might well have directly prevented the assailant from abducting this victim. And that's true in this case, Your Honor. If Prescott Sigmund intended to kill his father in another way, certainly the plaintiff, Wright Sigmund, would not have been injured. And then it goes on to say, from Bruno differentiates, here one could only speculate whether security cameras. So we're not talking about security cameras. We're talking about a rolling steel garage door that every building uses. And for those reasons,
Mr. Carnotti, if I recall correctly, you said in your brief that this vehicle was driven exclusively by the perpetrators and the victim's father. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And it was parked at the father's office building.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe that, well, that's certainly correct, and it also, I believe, was sometimes parked at his apartment building, which was in the Watergate complex.
Okay, but it was blown up when parked. And that was, the bomb was planted late on one evening.
The evening of July 10th.
And it was detonated the next day.
The 12th, garage.
So why was the vehicle in the garage overnight?
He left it there. It was a vehicle that the father had used from time to time for tailgates. I believe it had a Redskins sticker on it and some other things. It was regularly.
It wasn't his commuter.
The father worked there. It wasn't his commuter vehicle.
Okay, I was confused about that.
If that answered the court's question.
Thank you, Mr. Carnotti, Mr. Hoffman. The case is submitted.